How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for our new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
David Locke, radio voice of Utah Jazz. And today our guest is head coach of the Jazz, Quinn Snyder. I got the fortunate chance to sit down in his office for 25 minutes to talk the game, all that's going on in the game, what coaches do in the offseason. It is a great conversation. The office is awesome. One of his walls are painted white so that he can write plays on the walls, on the board, wherever he wants, whenever the latest idea comes. And he's got plays just written everywhere. It's a basketball mad scientist office with the incredible brain power and offensive ingenuity of Quinn Snyder. It's really quite a scene. The conversation starts off, we're just talking about kind of what coaches do in the offseason, how they steal plays, look for plays, things of that nature, how the game's evolving. We talk a little bit positionless. We talk about some pick and roll stuff. We kind of evolve and we get into some about this year's Utah Jazz, but it's generally just a big picture view of the NBA. I really hope you take it in, you enjoy it, and that this is some, because it was a neat treat for me to get this insight for Quinn. You listen closely, he'll tell you a lot. He's really bright and his mind is moving 1,000 miles an hour, and so you got to listen intently to grab a piece or two of that. So really appreciate Quinn taking the time with us to do that. This is obviously part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Each and every NBA team will be up and running for you with its own Locked On Podcast. Jazz fans know I host Locked On Jazz, and we have a Locked On for your favorite team as well. So make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe. If you're trying to get ready for the season, Josh Lloyd and the Locked On Fantasy Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast has done amazing work previewing all of the teams around the NBA. So go subscribe to Locked On Fantasy Basketball. He does it with a fantasy tint, but it's really just a preview. So lots of great content out there. All right, we're all set. You subscribe to those things. Thanks for subscribing to this. 5 stars on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Of course, if you want to advertise on this program, reach men between the ages of 18 and 54. We're 98% male audience. Feel free to email me, dlock09@gmail.com. It is the Quinn Snyder edition of Locked On NBA. In Quinn Snyder's coach's office, we talk a little hoops as the season's getting ready. You can feel it going, but let's go backwards.
You got it.
Do you watch your team? Do you watch other teams? As you prepare for the next year and you have this kind of 4 or 5 months, you're not one who turns it off very much. So What do you spend most of your time doing and watching to try to pick up improvements?
Well, a little both is the answer. I watched a lot of Miami at the end of the year because I thought that was when, you know, Joe Johnson was playing there, and the way they played, particularly playing small, is possibly how we would use him during that time. You know, I know George Hill. I didn't watch a lot of George Hill. I know Boris, you know, and those roles I'm more familiar with, but I watched other teams. You know, the Olympics is always good. You know how much I like, you know, watching the international game and feel like you pick stuff up. But the primary thing for us is trying to find the areas where we think we can be better. And what we've done, David, is I've given projects to the guys on the staff. And whether it be analytically, watching games, they'll dig in on certain areas of the game. And we'll try to get better doing those things. An example would be defensive rebounding. We were not a good defensive rebounding team late in the game. So watch that. Try to figure out why. You know, the last 5 minutes, you and I have talked about this a ton. You know, we watched every game. You know, those and you know, start to break it down and get a real good idea, as opposed to stuff that people are saying that's easily, you know, kind of perceptive. Really find out what's going on, and how we can be better, and then talk about it. You know, we'll have a staff retreat, and we'll grind in on all that stuff. And you know, by the same token, I was saying about watching individual players. You know, how can we use Rudy better? How can we, you know, we've got a different point guard situation. Is that going to impact how we play? Are we happy, you know, with the way we're getting shots? Do we want to do something different defensively? Do we want to be more or less aggressive, you know, watching other teams, what they're doing? And it's actually pretty fun. And you find sometimes you're right, sometimes you're not, and try to figure it out and continue to adjust. That's really what it's about.
One of the things that I know through research you found is that you actually were trailing most of the time going those final 5 minutes. So the whole number about 21 losses in the final 5 minutes was a bit misleading, because in those games actually that you were tied or ahead, you did okay, or you ran into Steph Curry or one of those. But in general, that rebounding one you mentioned was weird. I think you were the 12th best rebounding team in the league. In the final 5 minutes, you were 30th. What did you find?
Well, it's exactly what you said, that when we really began to dig in on it, it was even more it was captured by our overall defensive rating, too. We were, I think, 7th, right, in the league defensively, and we were 28th. The last 5 minutes of the game. So why is that, right? You start to look at those numbers and well, it was defensive rebounding. And then you start to look and fouls. We fouled some. But it's the same thing. I mean, so if we subtract those games where we were behind, like how many games are we really talking about where we have the ability to truly impact the game? And what we saw a lot of was switching, where we just had blown assignments and lack of communication. We saw some defensive rebounds that went over our head, where, you know, we saw some of them. The free throw line was a big one. You know, when people were shooting free throws, and, you know, that's a possession you need. And you're not talking about that many defensive rebounds that you don't get, but the ones you're talking about take your defense, you know, your defensive rating, you know, from pretty good to really bad. And so I think more than anything, making some adjustments to that and really just raising awareness that our players need to know, you know, this is what hurt us. You know, this is what's costing us. There's a couple of other things that I think I know you'll find interesting. I don't know how much detail I can get into just talking to you, because it's almost visual. The strong side guard, who we try to stay with the guy in the corner, because that's an open three. It's the easiest shot. It's the most dangerous shot. But when the shot goes up, so a lot of times that guy doesn't get to the rebound. And what we started to see is it's not so much on our bigs. A lot of times it was on our smalls, on our wings. We didn't rebound the ball at a high enough rate as a team, and our bigs can do a better job, but our guards got to help. You know, they got to really help them, and that means we got to get there. And the more situations like that we can identify and take something that's kind of amorphous and then subjective and then make it objective, then I can hold guys accountable and we can improve.
You may have just answered a little bit there, but you're referencing analytics here at times. Do you find the analytics on these things are valuable to you? Hey, here's an issue. I've got to go find it. They tip off an issue to you. Do you find it as a teaching point where you can use it to the guys? Where are you finding that level of analytics helpful to you as a head coach?
I think both, you know, inductive and deductive, in that there are certain ideas that I may have, and I'll turn to one of the guys on the staff or our analytics staff. Because our coaching staff is pretty dialed in too, and you know, I bring stuff to you occasionally where I've got an idea, and you know, hey, help me, let me know if this is true or not, or debunk it, and kind of let's see what we find. And then on the other side, like here's the numbers, like what's happening, you know, why is this, you know, where it's pointing me, you know, that's what we did with some of that late, you know, the late game stuff, the clutch stuff, because you know, you could assume it's one thing and like, let's really dig down and find out what this is so we can impact, or maybe we don't want to touch it. You know, one of the biggest things for us is the whole concept of pace. And you know, I talk about this all the time, but you know, you're not going to shoot the ball between 24 and 18 seconds on the shot clock, probably, unless you turn someone over. That's when those quick shots are going to come. And where we can be more efficient is probably between 18 and 12, but there's a reason that wasn't happening last year. And it may not happen this year because we didn't space the floor. And, you know, usually on the front side, you know, when you have teams that attack there, there's a ball dominant guard that can make plays and shift the defense. But our possessions after misses looked a lot like our possessions after makes. And when we started to go back and look at, you know, on makes, misses, you know, free throws, whatever, when did we shoot the ball? You get a better idea, of if you want to, how you want to coach that, if you want to coach it differently. And it's lineup specific too. So you start again and say, hey, we didn't do this well. Well, we didn't do it well when these guys were in the game, or we did it well when these guys were in the game. So that there's a lot there, and you have to be careful. You know, I always laugh when we talk about points. You know, they're the highest scoring team, that, you know, these people still kind of hang on to that, and it's, you know, it's just, it's not an accurate representation of the situation. If, you know, it's all about, you know, possessions. In a low possession game, you're not going to score. But for us, you know, low possession games haven't been bad, because it takes people out of their rhythm at times if they want to score a lot of points. So anyway, I'm rambling on, but you know what I'm talking about.
So on pace, so much of the talk last year was about two things. I'm not sure I believed either of them. One was small, and the other was pace. I actually don't think either of them actually leads. Yeah. I mean, there's really very little number correlation over the last 5 years in this league of where you finish in pace of play to whether you win or not. So what is it that everyone's talking about?
We'll take it one step further. There's no correlation between pace and offensive efficiency. So you can be a very good offensive team, incredibly efficient, and play slow. You know, one of the interesting things that one of the guys came up with, is it the 1996 Jazz, like the epically, you know, historic, one of the great teams in the NBA, you know, were 17th in the league in pace that year and would have been last in the league in pace were they playing this year. So a team that where we never even talked about pace, that was a great team.
And number one in the league offensively.
Number one offensive team in the league by a lot. And if they played today, they would have been considered a slow-paced team. So it's a lot of it has to do with trends. Golden State's affected everybody's perception because they have the best shooters in the game. So if they're open early, they shoot, because those are shots those guys can make. They shoot contested shots. We think of contested shots as bad shots. Well, for them, contested shots sometimes are good shots. You know, sometimes open shots, like for us, there's times Rudy's open from the top of the key, but we don't want him to shoot that. It's not a good shot. So the pace thing to me is but it's also, it can be instructive. You know, small, you know, is one thing. What small usually means now is spacing. When you play four small players, usually those guys are shooters. You know, Sean Livingston has the ball more, and he's not a three-point shooter. But when Golden State plays, they put shooting on the court, and that's what you see with small teams. And maybe there's some defensive advantages. It's easy to kind of just look at a trend and take it for granted. And in the end, it's really simple. You know, you got to play the right way for your team, and you know, you play to your personnel. If you've got an unbelievably punishing running back, you should give him the ball, and it's that, you know, that to me kind of takes it, makes it simple.
Now, I realize as a Seahawk fan that every Seahawk fan is going to take that as you're referencing a Super Bowl.
We had to go there.
Yes, you had to.
Well, there it's a great example, because you know, even without Marshawn Lynch, they're going to run the ball, and they run the ball because they've got a great defense. And you know, if the Seahawks were an NBA team, they would be one of the slower-paced teams. But it's pretty effective, right?
It does work. You made a comment, I think, 2 or 3 years ago about positionless basketball. Mm-hmm. Is positionless basketball evolving into almost like every position basketball? It's not that it's positionless. It's that you want Gordon Hayward to actually be able to be your point guard, your shooting guard, your small forward, and your power forward if he needs to be. Joe Johnson to take the roles that actually represent all four of those positions. That you actually have a lineup, frankly, that you can throw out there at times where probably Joe Johnson, Gordon Hayward, Rodney Hood, whoever you have at the point guard, can play any of four. So it's not positionless. It's almost every position. Do you understand?
Yeah, no, I understand the distinction. I think the key component of that when is really it's not to me that you don't have a position on offense. It's that you can guard every position on defense. So it's you can play positionless if you can match up with 1 through 5. So when if you have someone that's able to guard a center, you know, then you can do whatever you want offensively with that player. It's just usually that person to guard the center is a center, like a big guy. We think of that and you know, and maybe not the same skill level offensively. If Magic Johnson, the Lakers played positionless basketball when Magic Johnson was their center, you know, he just happened to be the point guard the other way. But because he could guard the center, you could surround him with other players. That's what Draymond Green does for Golden State. That's what allows them to be more positionless. And Iguodala and Livingston, of course. But you're going to see that because it's harder to score in the post. The post, it's officiated a little bit differently. When people switch the way the rules are, it's easier to help on the post. And as a result, you know, when you have a mismatch offensively with a bigger guy and a smaller guy, that's harder to capitalize on. So if you're not going to be able to take advantage of it offensively, you know, it allows those teams to quote unquote be positionless. And you know, if Gordon Hayward can guard a center, it's hard for a center to guard Gordon Hayward.
Can Joe Johnson at 255 guard a center?
We'll find out. You know, I know Boris Diaw can. You know, and there's, you know, we can't, you know, part of this positionless stuff works when you have guys that have size and are positionless, you know, so it's when you have 6'7", 6'8", 6'9" guys that can guard multiple positions and play multiple positions, that's what you get. You don't, to me, one of the biggest issues in playing is the boards. You know, that's where teams, I think, get hurt at times. And really what we're seeing when you are quote-unquote positionless defensively is you're able to switch pick and roll. And pick and roll has been the most effective and the most common component in NBA offenses. So if you can address that with a coverage that makes it hard, that's a really effective way to guard. And, again, you know, how you exploit that offense, that's what you saw in the playoffs.
Some of this positionless stuff leads to something that I find very – that I haven't felt it's been talked about enough. Maybe it's because I'm wrong on it. But if you're a point guard in the NBA, you're used to getting hit 70 times a game on a pick and roll. You've learned how to deal with it. But if you're a shooting guard or small forward or power forward, you're not used to it. And so I watch you guys all the time having Rodney Hood and Gordon Hayward handling the ball, forcing a small forward or shooting guard who's not used to playing in the pick and roll play there as much. And I find that – to maybe be one of the least talked about things in this league that really is incredibly efficient and effective.
Well, what you're talking about, interestingly, is matchups, but it's matchups in a specific situation. It's a pick and roll matchup, and you're right. It's just getting someone who isn't used to defending that situation and trying to take advantage of them. We've got to do a better job actually screening those guys, you know, that and give those guys some help. But it's similar when you see teams run screening actions where smalls will screen down on bigs. Big guys aren't used to defending screens. So they're not as comfortable doing that, and they don't do as good a job of it. Same thing with, you know, a small forward playing pick and roll. It's one of the reasons, you know, LeBron is so good at playing pick and roll. And you think about the guys that guard him, not only is he usually better, but he's more comfortable in a situation that a typical three-man doesn't have to, you know, as you said, maybe a point guard defends pick and roll 40 times in a game over the course of a season, you know, and a wing may go through a game. You know, if you played the Atlanta Hawks 2 years ago, you were guarding Kyle Korver or Damari Carroll, you wouldn't defend pick and roll maybe the whole game. You know, now if you were guarding Jeff Teague, you'd probably defend it every time down the court. So the kind of fish out of a water concept, and you know, you can flip it, and you know, we work on it a lot defensively, so those guys are comfortable. But it's a good observation and one I agree with.
Let's go back to something you were talking about earlier about watching film of. I remember earlier in off season of film watching, there was a coach, I'm going to leave nameless, whose team ran a really cool set, and I went to another coach or scout in the league, and I was like, oh my gosh, you should have seen what so and so ran last night. It was really cool. They did this sequence off this, and the guy mumbles, that's all he does. He just watches everybody else and steals their stuff. He's a film guy through and through. Just steal. And it was like, it was an insult.
Yeah.
And I walked away thinking, like, that's brilliant. Like, you got 29 other incredibly smart coaches in this league. Go steal all of their best stuff and run it. What is that coaching? Is there kind of an unspoken rule you're not supposed to do that? Is, in your thought, is like, yeah, absolutely, I'm going to go steal everybody's stuff. You've had plenty of your stuff stolen.
Yeah, and hopefully, and I've stolen a lot of, hopefully, the whole key is just to steal good stuff. It's like, and really a lot of that, you know, when I watch teams that I think are similar to us in some ways and see how they, what they run, how they exploit, you know, their team and how they may hide somebody that doesn't fit with what you want to do. But I don't know, it, you know, like every profession, people's egos get wrapped up in it and, you know, you come up with something that you consider original that, you know, probably if you go back, you know, like Dick Motta was running, Phil Johnson was telling me, Dick Motta, their offense, Otto, Phil was with Dick Motta in Kansas City, you know, how many years ago, and you know, he didn't, they helped create it, but, you know, you steal it, and, you know, we've named plays after EuroLeague teams, because I saw sets that were over there, and no one knows, because they don't watch the EuroLeague, but, you know, they'll say, hey, Utah ran that. Well, actually, Madrid ran that.
Well, that's my next question. I was like, do you go try to find some coach you know about with your European time there in the Adriatic League or some league that no one knows about where you're like, I'm going to go find a play there?
Yeah, I mean, I just think we're aware, you know, and it's, you can find them anywhere. It's, there's no question. And again, though, there's, it's one thing to run something. It's another thing to run it the right way. So in anything, right, it's you can have the music, you know, and see the notes written out, but to be able to actually play the song is different. And for all of us coaches, sometimes it, you know, you help write the music, you borrow it, you know, and you teach it, but, you know, players can make the worst plays look good. And if you don't execute or you simply just miss a shot, no one remembers the play. It could be well-crafted, well-executed. You know, I'd rather have a bad play and have a guy make a shot, and that makes you a better coach.
You, last year at this time, I asked you what had taken most of your thought. You said at the time was trying to figure out offenses to combat switching. Mm-hmm. So if I ask you now, what is the thing that's taken most of your thought time about the league and the game in general this offseason?
You know, that's still, I'm thinking about our group defensively and kind of a balance between, you know, being really, really good at what we do, kind of having a core defense, and then how much in our third year are we capable of, you know, adjusting to either be more aggressive, or your point about defensive switch or whatever it is, without compromising, you know, what has got to be our biggest strength. That's been something that's a fine line that we need to figure out. And then, you know, offensively, I think there's always an adjustment process as you get new personnel, or as your guys get there's some things that we tried to do last year that you want to change sometimes mid-season, and to change them, just to, even if you just tweak them a little bit, you may end up making it worse. So you kind of just stuck with it. And there's a few things like that I've been looking forward to, you know, to playing with and doing something different. But if you change it to mid-year, your execution's going to be worse. So, trying to find, you know, new stuff to tweak, you know, really our flow. You know, we talk about our motion offense and trying to play to different tendencies. And you see, you know, to your example of, you know, coaches in the league stealing stuff, and that happens all the time. And once an action or a play is run more and more at a higher volume, teams become better at guarding it. You know, so when Princeton was the only team playing the Princeton offense, it was harder to guard him because you only saw him, you know, once or twice a year. Now, if four other teams in the Ivy League are running it and you play them all, they all know how to guard each other. So it's one of the reasons we try to defend certain things. We may run something offensively in practice for our defense just to get those guys comfortable with it. So there are some things that I want to do differently that I think the league is – you know, we ran a lot of handoffs, and people didn't guard our bigs as much out there because they weren't great shooters, and they were free screeners. And as people have scouted us and prepared more and our personnel has gotten more, people become more familiar with it, we've started to see guys get pressured out there, you know, and that changes the way that we're, you know, we're adjusting to those things. And we'll keep trying to do that to, you know, hopefully stay a little bit ahead. And you know, sometimes we won't be ahead. We'll be going the wrong direction, but that's part of it.
Final thing for you, Quinn. We talked all last year. Your team's numbers with your main guys on the floor were great. I mean, your lineup numbers, and now you have this built-up bench. How excited are you about the prospects of the lineups you can throw on the floor this year?
Well, we have versatility. We can play a number of ways. Your greatest strength, you know, being your greatest weakness, that whole line of thought. You know, we're going to have a team. We've had guys that have played because either injury or maybe not as much depth. And that's been good because it's helped them be confident. And they've been great about just buying into each other. But there hasn't been the kind of the competitive, the internal competitive threat of, you know, there's a balance there. You don't want guys to play afraid and be worried about making a mistake. But at the same time, sometimes there's urgency that's created when you know if I don't do this, someone else will. So that balance is one that I've always been kind of, you know, interested in trying to achieve. And then the challenge for some of the players in addition is just going to be to maintain the level of selflessness that's made us good. I mean, I think and when you buy into the group like that, that's why you play hard. You know, if you feel like you're vested and you've got ownership, you play hard. And, you know, that's going to be a challenge for some of the players. You can have the best character and the best guys and good people, and there's still those moments where we're all human beings. And, you know, you want to finish the game. And maybe you feel like you should finish the game because you're playing great and coach makes a decision to play someone else. And you want to win the game. It's not like you don't like your teammate. You just feel like, hey, you should be out there. And sometimes, you know, to play, maybe you should, you know, like that's going to be – those decisions are hard decisions, and oftentimes you don't know, you know, at the time, and you never know. You know, it's possible that if you played a different lineup, you may still lose. You just lose by less, you know, and then you lose by – you just don't know. So all the thought that's got to go into making those decisions is in-depth thought. And it's more of it's even required because we have more possible lineups and more possible combinations of players.
It's the cost of being good.
Well, you know, they say those are good problems to have. I mean, we've been, you know, last year, I don't think we've overreacted to injury. We've had a lot of it. And we have a group right now that we found out about our team. You know, we didn't get to find out as much about the point guard situation because Dante was hurt, but we've found out more about our group, and sometimes having injuries has actually forced we've seen some other guys. But I think we've got a good enough feel that some of the acquisitions that we made, and Dennis is just, you know how I feel about Dennis and how I feel about working with him, and very patient, very tactical, very smart about how we've gone about it. And that's hard to do sometimes. It's easy to kind of rush in. And, you know, that hasn't been the case. And I think as a result, the decisions that we've made are very sound. Now, you know, nothing always is the way you want it to be. But, you know, I think we've put ourselves in a position where hopefully we can address some of our weaknesses and hopefully be better.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Locker.
Head coach Quinn Snyder.